a part of our troubled history that can still be seen from the air.
If we were flying over this prior to European settlement, we would have seen large fields of corn and beans, trees and squash. When the first English began moving in here, they began chopping down the trees and expanding the fields available for cotton.
The enormous profitability of cotton undermined the principles of the American Revolution and forever altered black life. The more money the planters made from growing cotton, the more cotton the planters wanted to grow. And that took more slaves. Slaves in the Upper South became incredibly more valuable as commodities because of this demand for them in the Deep South. They were sold off in droves. And that created a second middle passage. And in many ways, the second middle passage was just as devastating as the first. To feed King Cotton, more than 1 million African Americans were carried off into the Deep South. That's 2.5 times the number that were brought to the United States from Africa. It was the largest forced migration in American history.
The number to call is 212-209-2950. That was a clip from the brilliant Henry Louis Gates. We are offering up his two DVD set, The African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross DVD. And there he sets the context for the entire discussion on slavery. The number to call is 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth here, asking you to call and support WBAI 99.5 FM. WBAI, an institution in New York City that must remain viable, that must remain on the air. For those of you who could call and pledge at the 150 level, we will send you this two DVD set that takes us from the slave days through the civil rights period to what is happening today. Again, that number is 212-209-2950. You know, the widow of C.L.R. James, and we're offering Toussaint L'Ouverture, one of C.L.R. James's book today. One of the things she said is that if we want to rid ourselves of the racism that is institutionalized in every pore of our relationship, every pore of society, one important way forward lies through another look at who the slaves were and who their descendants are and what they are trying to do even now. You know, the film 12 Years a Slave, it's won all kinds of awards, and that's a, you know, it's a good thing. A lot of people went to see that film of every race across this nation, also over in Europe, in the UK, people are going to see that film, and it really puts the human face on what happened during slavery, the torture, the horrors of slave trade. It's one thing to read about it, and it's yet another thing to see it. But a lot of people who saw that film says, you know what, it's a great film, but how come we don't know that much about slave revolts and the kinds of rebellions that happened? Because a lot of that history is suppressed. And that's one of the reasons that in addition to the African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross DVD, we are also bringing you the On to New Orleans pack. And what's in that pack? You will get a book and you will get a CD. The book is the rare gem, Albert Thrasher's book, telling us the story of the largest slave uprising in U.S. history, one of the most suppressed and hidden stories of African and African-American history. Is the story of the 1811 slave revolt right close to New Orleans. The aim of the revolt was the establishment of an independent republic, a black republic. Over 500 Africans from 50 different nations with 50 different languages would wage war against U.S. troops and territorial militias. Now, this is not common knowledge. Alrighty, so call us at 212-209-2950 and get this material. But for a pledge at the 150 level, we will not only send you this rare, practically impossible to find. I know I had a real hard time finding it, but we will also throw in a CD of the voices of those who were slaves. I mean, I just think that everybody should hear these voices. It's one thing to read the slave narratives. It's one thing to see an actor playing a slave. It's quite another to actually hear the voice of someone who was actually enslaved. The number to call is 212-209-2950, and we will send you the CD and we will send you the book. We could also send you the African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross, Toussaint L'Ouverture, the book by C.L.R. James. Now, here's the deal. I need to raise $3,000 this hour to help to keep WBAI on the air, help to keep WBAI viable. 212-209-2950. So I need 20 of you calling and pledging at the 150 level. That's $12.50 a month, people. And you help to keep WBAI on the air. And you also get these amazing thank you gifts and add-ons. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Now, the next clip that I'm going to play, really emotional. It is the voice of a man who was a slave. He's not an actor. He was a slave. And he's telling his story. The first time that we're premiering this today on WBAI, this is a must-have for everybody. I hope you get that. Because listening to this voice, it's like reaching back in time and touch those who went through unspeakable horrors to build up this country and build up Europe, okay, and made the way for those of us. Let us honor them. Let us keep their voices alive. Call 212-209-2950. Let's go to a clip right now to hear the voice of a man who served as a slave.
My mother was a slave. Sister was a slave. Father was a slave. My father belonged to a gunman. And Burnley died during the wartime because he was afraid he'd have to go to war. But now, in them days, you could hire a substitute to take your place. Well, he couldn't get a substitute to take his place, so he ran away from home. And he took cold. And when he come back, war was over, but he died. Well, I don't know how. I don't know, tell you the truth. When I think of it today, I don't know how I'm living. None of the rest of them, as I know, are living. I'm the oldest one that I know that's living. But still, I'm thankful to the Lord. Now, if my master wanted to send me, he never said he couldn't get a horse and ride and walk. You know, you'd be barefooted, cold. That didn't make no difference. He wasn't no more than a dog, some of them in them days. He wasn't treated as good as he treats dogs now. But still, I don't like to talk about it because it makes people feel bad. I could say a whole lot I don't like saying. I won't say a whole lot anymore. I remember when the Yankees come along and took all the good horses and took all the, sold all the meat and flour and sugar and stuff out in the river and let it go down the river. And they know the people wouldn't have nothing to live on, but they done that. And that's the reason why I don't like to talk about it. And people, and if you was cooking anything, eating that for yourself, and if they was hungry, they'd go and eat it all up, wouldn't you get nothing? They just come in and drink up all the milk and just do as you please. And time to be passing by all night long, walking, mud, raining, all the hell of a time. colored people is free, you ought to be awful thankful. And some of them are sorry they are free now. Some of them know they'd rather be slaves.
Hmm. Which would you rather be, Uncle Tom?
Me? Which I'd rather be? You know what I'd rather do? If I thought, had any idea, that I'd ever be a slave again, I'd take a gun and just end it all right away. Because you're nothing but a dog. You're not a thing but a dog. Night never comes that you have nothing to do. Time to cut tobacco. If they want you to cut all night long out in the field, you cut. And if they want you to hang all night long, you hang tobacco. It didn't matter about your tired, being tired, you're afraid to say you're tired.
An amazing thank you gift that we are offering you. That's the voice of Fountain Hughes, a man who served as a slave. He was a slave. Call us at 212-209-2950. I'm so proud to be bringing you this material on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. 212-209-2950. The pledge level at the 150 pledge level to pledge your support for WBAI. To keep WBAI on the air, we will send a thank you gift as your thank you gift, a CD of the voice of Fountain Hughes. He was born in 1848 or 1854. It's not sure, but he died only in 1957. It wasn't that long ago. He was born a slave in Charlottesville, Virginia, freed after the Civil War in 1865. The number is 212-209-2950. It is so emotional on this anniversary day that of the killing of Trayvon Martin, and also the recent passing of Chokwe Lumumba, the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, who came out of the movement, the liberation, the Black Liberation Movement, the movement for human rights, who died suddenly, to be bringing you this material because it makes you think of all of those who have gone on before us, all of those who made the way for each and every one of us. And it hurts my heart that Trayvon died and he didn't hear the voice of Fountain Hughes. I didn't hear the voice of Fountain Hughes until very recently in trying to prepare this material for you. 212-209-2950. Who should not hear the voice? You know, listening to his voice, you hear so much in his voice. He talks about his mother, his sister, and his father were slaves. He talked about who they belonged to. He talked about how they were living. He talked about just being treated like a dog. All right. And then when asked if he thought he would ever be a slave again, he would take a gun and just end it right away. I mean, you know, for those of you who saw 12 Years a Slave, you know, that was the tip of the iceberg. This is a conversation that this country has got to face. The number is 212-209-2950. How can we come across the divides of race and economic background if we are not facing the reality of what happened, the impact that it had on people, on Black people, on white people, on Native American people? The number to call is 212-209-2950. I want to hear a little bit about what Dr. Gerald Horn, the historian, has to say, because we are packaging the CD with the voices of those who were slaves, with the book On to New Orleans about the Louisiana's heroic 1811 slave revolt, that has been so suppressed. You hear practically nothing about it. Let's hear from Dr. Horn.
The connection between slavery and capitalism is well established. Eric Williams, Trinidad and Tobago, a former prime minister, in his book Slavery and Capitalism, put that point forward, as did Walter Rodney of Guyana, and how Europe underdeveloped Africa, not to mention Joseph Nkore, of Nigeria, now at the University of Rochester, whose prize-winning book a few years ago basically underscored that point. But I think the other takeaway is that these Africans who were involved in this revolt in 1811 in Louisiana, which you're featuring in terms of the Albert Thrasher book, you keep asking, understandably, why is this revolt so little known? I think part of the explanation is that the Africans repeatedly were trying to overthrow the U.S. government and overthrow state governments. And it becomes very difficult to put a heroic halo around the head of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and Andrew Jackson and James Monroe and all the rest when we recognize that there were enslaved people who were seeking to overthrow them, not just run amok and act as marauders and killing people and the kind of stories that sometimes you hear, but actually trying to overthrow this government and establish a more democratic government. And I think that that's the legacy that has been bequeathed to us. How do we radically transform the government of the United States of America?
And the number to call is 212-209-2950. We are offering up the a CD with the voices of actual slaves, of those who were enslaved, and the rare and hard to find book On to New Orleans, one of the largest slave revolt in U.S. history, a story that has been suppressed. The pledge level is $150. You get to keep WBAI on the air. The number is 212-209-2950. I need at least 20 of you calling and pledging at the $150 level. That's $12.50 a month for the On to New Orleans pack, or for the African Americans Many Rivers to Cross DVD by Henry Louis Gates. Any of this material makes an amazing gift to someone. And you know, graduations are coming up, high school graduations, kids going off to college, perfect gift material. 212-209-2950. Call us at 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, pitching my heart out here and really in a bit of an emotional state, because as many times as I have heard the voices of Fountain Hughes, who was a slave, it nevertheless just breaks my heart. And thinking back of my grandfather's father, a slave down in Barbados, all you folks from Barbados right now in New York City, all you Caribbean folks, 212-209-2950. In fact, the Bronx, Staten Island, New Jersey, Manhattan, Harlem, the South Bronx, Flushing, Jackson, out in Queens, please call 212-209-2950. Help us to preserve the voices of those who were slaves. Help us to get the story out about the largest slave uprising in U.S. history. 212-209-2950. I want to go on now to hear more from Fountain Hughes. He's not an actor. He's a man who was a slave. He was born in 1848 or 1854. He died in 1957. And he is telling us about his experience.
Were you ever sold?
No, I never was sold.
You always stayed with the same person?
I was too young to sell.
Oh, that's it.
See, I wasn't old enough during the war to sell, during the Army. And my father got killed in the Army, you know, so it left us small children just to live on whatever people choose to give us. I were bound out for $1 a month, and my mother used to collect the money. Children couldn't spend money when I come along. In fact, when I come along, young men couldn't spend no money until they were 21 years old. And then you're 21, well, then you could spend your money. But if you wasn't 21, you couldn't spend no money. I couldn't spend 10 cents if somebody gave it to me. Of course, they'd think, well, you might have stole it. We all come along, you might say, we had to give an account of what you done. You couldn't just do things and walk off and say, I didn't do it. We'd have to giving account of it. Now, after we got freed and they turned us over like cattle, we didn't have nowhere to go. And we didn't have nobody to boss us. And we didn't know nothing. And there wasn't no school. And when they started the little school, people that were slaves, there couldn't many of them go to school, except they had a father and a mother. And my father was dead, and my mother was living. She had 3-4 other little children. She had to put them all to work to help take care of the others. So we had what you call worse than dogs have got it now. The dogs have got it now better than we had it when we come along. I know, I remember one night I was out. After I was free and I didn't have nowhere to go, I didn't have nowhere to sleep, I didn't know what to do. My brother and I was together. So we knew a man that had a living stable. And we crept in that yard and got in one of the hacks of the automobile and slept in that hack all night long. So next morning we could get out and go where we belonged. But we were afraid to go at night because we didn't know where to go and didn't know what time to go. But we got away from there and we were afraid to go back. So we kept sleeping that thing all night until the next morning, and we got back where we belonged before the people got up. Soon the day commenced to come on break, we got up and commenced to go where we belonged. But we never done that but the one time. After that, we always, if it was away, we'd try to get back before night come. But then that was on a Sunday too that we done that. Now, when we were slaves, we couldn't do that, see? And after we got free, we didn't know nothing to do. And my mother, she hunted places and bound us out for $1 a month. And we stayed there maybe a couple of years. And she'd come over and collect the money every month. And $1 was worth more then than $10 is now. And and the men used to work for $10 a month, $120 a year, used to hire that way. And now you can't get a man for $50 a month. If you pay a man now $50 a month, you don't want to work for it.
More like $50 a week nowadays.
Well, that's just it, exactly. They want $50 a week, and they ain't got no more now, and we had then. We had nowhere, nothing. We didn't have nothing on it, just to... Like the cattle, just turned out and get along the best you could.
The number to call is 212-209-2950. How could you not be moved from the voice of Fountain Hughes? He died back in 1957. He's not an actor, but he was a slave. His mother, his sister, his father were slaves. And he, fortunately for him, he was never sold. He was able to stay with his mom. His father was killed. They lived as they could. He says after the Emancipation Proclamation, after they were freed, they were turned out like cattle. Okay, with nothing. Forget the 40 acres and a mule. Whatever happened to that? The number to call is 212-209-2950. Pledge at the 150 level and we would send you this moving, this precious, and it is precious CD of the voice of Fountain Hughes, along with On to New Orleans, Albert Thrasher's brilliant book that has been so suppressed, of the largest slave revolt that happened in U.S. history. You know, they always like to portray slaves as victims. Well, yes, our ancestors certainly were victims, but they also rose up on a regular basis. And this heroic 1811 slave revolt book is very, very difficult to find. It's a full of information. It tells you about the lead up to that slave revolt, the revolt itself, the leaders of the revolt. The number is 212-209-2950. If we don't preserve this history, who's going to do it? The state of Texas that wants to take the words slave trade out of textbooks? 212-209-2950. And I just need, we're getting close to the top of the hour. And you know what? I need six kind-hearted people, six angels out there who know the pain in the voice, who heard the pain in the voice of this man who was a slave, to say, I'm going to get this material and I'm going to share it with schools. I'm going to share it with my church. I'm going to share it with my synagogue. I'm going to share it with my mosque, you know, or maybe I'm going to send it to the White House for those two little girls, those two young women are up in there. 212-209-2950. Let not their suffering be in vain. Let not what Fountain Hughes went through be in vain. Let his voice not be silenced. 212-209-2950. My heart is full just listening to this. I get chills every time I hear his voice, because you know what? It's like going back in time. And it is like standing with our ancestors. 212-209-2950. Went through unspeakable horrors. In the slave revolt, so many people were killed as a result. You know, the army came in, the militia came in that slave revolt in New Orleans. They burnt people alive. They cut their heads off and put them on stakes as you enter the city of New Orleans so you could see it. Because they can't have that. They can't have a slave uprising, a victorious uprising like happened in Haiti. The leaders of this slave rebellion in New Orleans were Haitians. 212-209-2950. I want to make a last call during this hour for this material right now. And I want to tell you what else we're offering. The On to New Orleans, Louisiana's Heroic 1811 Slave Revolt, along with this CD that brings tears to my eyes as I'm listening to the voice of a man who was a slave. 150 level. The African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross, the two DVD set. African professor, Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates, from the days of slavery all the way up to the present day. Toussaint Louverture, a leader of the Haitian Revolution, the only successful slave revolt in history, which was presumed to be lost. This particular book was presumed to be lost until the rediscovery of a draft copy back in 2005. That was back from 1936, the thing was lost. We're offering it to you today as part of our pack. All of these items are available on their own, people. But for us to meet our goal for the hour, we need some of you saying, you know, I'm going to make a tax-deductible donation. I'm going to keep WBAI on the air. I'm going to support WBAI. And also important, I'm going to preserve these stories. I am going to spread this history. I'm going to preserve these voices. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I want to play more from Fountain Hughes, but you know, to tell you about him, he was a grandson of Wormley Hughes and Ursula Granger, the great-great-grandson of Betty Hemings, the slave matriarch at Monticello. Fountain Hughes, the man who was a slave, we're bringing you his voice, okay? So, yeah, I think we should go on to hear more from the next clip. But I also want to thank, though, Carol Moore out in Montclair, New Jersey is in the house. Jersey is in the house. 212-209-2950. Emmett Polk out in Springfield Gardens, New York. Emmett, thank you so very much for standing with those who gave so much so that we are here walking today. 212-209-2950. And yeah, we are going to go on to hear more from Fountain Hughes. But I want to get some more phone calls coming in, because this is the last call for this material during this hour. We work really hard putting this together for you. The On to New Orleans Pack 150, along with the CD of the voices of actual slaves. The suppressed history not being taught in history books. I want to put a challenge out there for labor unions. Labor unions in the house. Okay? You know how those enslaved were used against the workers in the factories in the North, white immigrants coming in, the Irish and the Italian. Pick up the phone, the Jewish people, 212-209-2950. It's about time that we cleared the air. It's about time that we learned what is being suppressed, the information being suppressed from us. And it's about time we honor those who were enslaved. It's all well and good. Everybody loves a celebrity, and you have some actors out there, the main actor, the lead actor in 12 Years a Slave. I think he should win. Okay, I'll put my cards out there for the Academy Award as well as that film. But you know what? They're all of the heroes that are not celebrities like Fountain Hughes. Let's hear more from Fountain Hughes, who was a slave, not an actor. He was a slave. But keep calling us at 212-209-2950.
My grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson. My grandfather was 115 years old when he died. And now I am 101 years old.
Who did you work for, Uncle Fountain, when...
Who did I work for?
Yeah.
You mean when I was a slave?
Yeah, when you were a slave, who did you work for?
Well, I belonged to Burnley's when I was a slave. My mother belonged to Burnley's. But we was all slave children, and soon after, when we found out that we were free, well, then we were bound out to different people, Thicken, Andrews, and all such people as that, and we had run away and wouldn't stay with them. Well, then we'd just go and stay anywhere we could, lay out at night and anywhere. We had no home, you know. We had just turned out like a lot of cattle. You know how to turn cattle out in the pasture? Well, after freedom, you know, colored people didn't have nothing. Colored people didn't have no beds when they were slaves. You won't slip on the floor. Tied it here, tied it there. Just like a lot of wild people. We didn't know nothing. Didn't allow you to look in no book. And there were some freeborn colored people where they had a little education. But there was very few of them where we was. And we all had a jail sentence. We were just same as we were in jail. Now, I couldn't go from here across the street, or I couldn't go to nobody's house without I have a note or something from my master. And if I had that pass, that's what we call a pass, if I had that pass, I could go wherever he sent me, and I'd have to be back, you know, whoever he sent me to. They'd give me another pass, and I'd bring that back, so it's to show how long I'd been gone. We couldn't go out and stay an hour or 2 hours or something like that. Just send you... Now, say, for instance, I'd go out here to Shirley's place, I'd have to walk, and I'd have to be back maybe in an hour. Maybe they'd give me an hour. I don't know just how long they'd give me. But they'd give me a note so it wouldn't nobody interfere with me and tell who I belonged to. And when I come back, boy, I'd carry it to my master and give that to him. That'd be all right. But I couldn't just walk away like the people just now, you know. It's what they call, we were slaves. We belonged to people. They sell us like they sell horses and cows and hogs and all like that. Have an auction bench and they put you on up on the bench and bid on you the same as you're bidding on cattle, you know.
Was that in Charlotte that you were a slave?
Hmm?
Was that in Charlotte or Charlottesville?
That is in Charlottesville.
Charlottesville, Virginia.
They sell the women, sell the men. Oh, and then if they had any bad ones, they'd sell them to the nigger traders, what they call the nigger traders, and they ship them down south and sell them down south. But otherwise, if you were a good person, they wouldn't sell you. But if you were bad and mean, they didn't want to beat you and knock you around, they'd sell you to the what called a nigger trader. If that were regular. I was sailed every month, you know, at the courthouse. And then they'd sell you. Maybe $200, $100, $500.
Fountain Hughes, who was a slave, describing what life was like. They'd sell you for $100, $200, $500. That is not an actor speaking. That is Fountain Hughes, born back in somewhere around 1848 or 1854, died back in 1957. The number to call is 212-209-2950. I've got about a minute or so. We want to raise about another $1,000 in that minute. I know that you are going to want to get this CD. It comes along with the book, On to New Orleans, Louisiana's Heroic 1811 Slave Revolt, a very, very suppressed story in these United States. Well, let's tell the truth to the youth. We don't want to be lying to the youth anymore. Every young person needs to hear the voice of Fountain Hughes, to hear his story, to hear what happened to him. His grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson, one of the founding fathers of this country. He was a slave owner. George Washington was a slave owner, one of the founding fathers. They don't like to mention that when they talk about the founding fathers, but why lie about it? Everybody needs to know the truth. 212-209-2950. I gotta go, but you gotta call us at 212-209-2950. Pledge your support for 99.5 FM WBAI, New York City. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Thank you for calling. Thank you for pledging. And keep calling us, 212-209-2950.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
I took a pounding from the radio today. I heard the radio say it over and over, and there was no escape.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Iggy Pop.
And you are, of course, tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York 99.5 on the FM dial and streaming live at WBAI.org. And Jim Freund will be along in about 30 minutes with The Apocalypse on Hour of the Wolf. But before that, we are going to listen to an X-1 episode that was NBC's science fiction series from 1956 to 1957. And we hear next, from January 2nd, 1957, The Moon is Green, a story by Fritz Leiber, featuring Bill Lipton, Joyce Gordon, and Ian Martin. X-1, as we await Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the time after the next atomic war. The place, somewhere in the United States. The story, The Moon is Green by Fritz Leiber.
The moon was green. Green as emeralds, green as leaves, green as grass. I reached my arms toward it and let it bathe me. I closed my eyes and let it kiss me.
Effie! Effie, where are you?
Oh, dear Lord, he mustn't see it. It's so beautiful, and he always kills beauty.
Effie!
In the bedroom, Hank! Oh, I've got to close the shutters before he comes. Mustn't.
Effie! What the devil are you doing? Close those shutters, you fool! Come away from there. You're trying to destroy yourself and me, too. You know those shutters are not safe to open for another 5 years.
I only wanted to look at the moon.
The moon? Here, count yourself for radiation. You know what the Central Committee would do to you for breaking the lead shield?
Kill me. I wouldn't mind.
Don't talk like that.
Would it be so different from being shut up in a lead coffin the way we are now? Would it be worse than the eternal thud of the air conditioners and the radiation filters?
Be still and count yourself. Good Lord, we're past the danger zone. Oh, wait a minute. Did you take off your watch?
No.
Well, give it to me. You fool. You little fool. What am I going to do with you? Can't you understand what kind of a world you're living in? Can't you?
Oh, yes, husband. I can understand only too well. It's the world that can't seem to understand. The world that went on stockpiling hydrogen bombs. The world that started testing those bombs. Telling itself it hadn't really exploded enough to make the air dangerous. And then began to throw them across continents, one nation against another. It lasted about 2 months. And after that, the fury of doomed men who thought only of taking with them as many of the enemy as possible. After the fury, in the time of terror. Men and women with death sifting into their bones and through their nostrils, fighting for bare survival under a dust-hazed sky that played fantastic tricks with the light of the sun and the green light of the moon. The only chance for existence was to claim one of those underground radiation-shielded places. They went to the strong. And afterward, the waiting behind the lead shields. The endless, interminable waiting.
You understand, I suppose, that we were allowed to reclaim this ground-level apartment only because the committee believed us to be responsible people. And because I've been making a darn good showing lately.
Yes, Hank, I understand.
It's a privilege to have some privacy, you know. I could send you back to the basement tenements. Would you like that?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Anything rather than that fetid huddling and that shameless communal sprawl. Yet is this really so much better? Being on the surface is meaningless. It only tantalizes. And yet...
Well?
No, no, Hank. I don't want to go back underneath.
Well, then try to behave yourself. Coming up through the tunnel just now, I decided I'd better talk to you. Frankly, Effie, the committee's beginning to be a little concerned about our lack of children.
Oh.
Charlie Baker asked me this morning if I'd like my name put on the list for a free woman.
You needn't bother.
What do you mean?
I mean, we're going to have a baby.
What? Effie, are you sure?
Yes.
Effie, that's wonderful. It's magnificent. Do you realize what this means to my rating with the committee? You know how important it is to the community to raise healthy members for the day when we can resume the surface war.
Yes, I've heard the broadcast.
We'll announce it at the meeting of the junior committee tonight.
Tonight?
Well, you hadn't forgotten about it, had you? It's the annual banquet. Now, you brighten yourself up and put on your best dress. I want the other juniors to see what a handsome wife the new member has got. What's the trouble now?
Well, I'm terribly sorry, Hank, but you'll have to go alone. I'm really not well.
There you go again. First the infantile, inexcusable business of opening the lead shutter, and now this. Don't you know what this could mean to my reputation, Effie?
I'm sorry.
You're coming, Effie. This is just neurotic pampering.
Hank, I'll just be sick, and you wouldn't be proud of me at all.
Now listen, Effie. Tonight's too important. It'll cause a lot of bad comment if a new member's wife isn't present. You know how just a hint of sickness starts all kinds of rumors about radiation disease. Now, what do you say?
No.
Effie, you're going. There's nothing wrong with you if I have
Hank.
To...
Hank! You're hurting my arm. It isn't good for the baby.
Oh, the baby? I'd almost forgotten. Oh, no, we have to be very careful. I suppose if I explain to them you aren't there because of the baby, it will make a difference.
Yes, I'll just stay here alone till you come back. When will you be back?
Well, those things usually go on pretty late. So if you're expecting company, you needn't worry.
Hank.
Yes, Effie?
Do you remember when we were first married?
Of course I remember.
You liked to go skiing, remember? You said it was like feeding a hunger for beauty, being up on a mountain covered with snow.
What are you talking about?
You forgot.
I haven't forgotten. I have just as much desire to get outside as you do, but I know there's no chance for me. I've got to see that my children and their children survive to see the sun again. We've got to behave like adults. To make sacrifices. We've got to keep the strain pure.
Hank, what do you suppose it's like for them?
For whom?
The freaks and the mutants. The outsiders.
What do you know about them?
I remember some of the pariahs. They were hairless, cringing creatures with radiation welts all over their bodies. They came begging to be taken in during the last... months of the terror. The committee ordered them shot down, just like dogs.
We don't like to talk about that.
Hank, are they still out there?
Effie, this is the sort of talk that's just morbid.
Are they?
Yes. There are still humans out there. At least they were humans. They know better than to come near the shelters now.
Oh, poor creatures.
I can't stand here discussing this nonsense all night. I have to get going. For the last time, are you sure you won't come down with me?
No. I'll wait here.
Don't you get lonely?
No.
I was talking to Jim Barnes today. He told me he wasn't going to be able to make it to the banquet either. Touch of the old flu, he said. That isn't like him, is it? Effie, are you listening?
What?
You remember Jim Barnes, don't you? He used to be sweet on you. Said you had the soul of a poet.
Well, yes, I remember him. Why?
Never mind. Well, I guess I got a bit sharp with you. I'm sorry about that. I was excited about being made a junior and the baby and all. Selfish of me, I apologize. As you get to bed early, I'll probably go over to the men's dorm for a while after the meeting. You'll be completely alone for the next 4 hours. Do you mind?
What? Oh, no. No.
Good night, Effie.
He looked at me strangely, and then his features returned to their usual harder, more calculating expression. possible that he had sensed my very dream? Had it been a dream? Oh, it must have been. Wasn't it possible that it had really happened? Oh, it had just been an illusion, a silly projection out of my starved romantic imagination. I waited until Hank's footsteps vanished down in the tunnel. And then I waited until I heard it. No, it isn't possible. There's nothing out there. Nothing but deformed monsters. I mustn't open the shutters. I mustn't. Oh, dear Lord, I've got to know. I've got to know. I've got to.
Bueno, so you haven't forgotten our meeting after all.
You.
And were you expecting someone else?
It wasn't a dream. You really were out there last night.
Oh, yes, and the night before.
I was afraid I dreamed, and I still think it's a dream.
Lean out into the moonlight a moment.
Is this a dream?
Oh. Or was it a flesh and blood kiss?
And your name is Patrick.
Aye?
Patrick.
Well, now, did you open the window to find God's own breath, the fresh evening air, or did you open it to invite me in?
Oh, of course. Come in. Come in.
Come, Joe Louis. Ah, here now, let me help you. Being a cat with 12 toes on each foot and ears like boxing gloves is a bit cumbersome. I have to help him a bit, you see. Come on now, laddie. There now. Is your husband about?
No, he won't be home for a while.
Well, still, I'd better close the door.
Oh, no. Leave them open.
The radiator?
I don't care. I want to see the moonlight.
Aye. Would you have a bit of food? Joe Louis and I are starved for a bite to eat.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll get it.
Oh, Effie.
Yes?
Oh, but you're a fair creature.
Thank you. His face wasn't horrible at all. Only thin and sensitive and terribly sad. And there were no radiation welts or scars on his skin. He looked just as he had looked that first night when I opened the ledge shutter and saw him crouched at the window. And now I knew it had been no dream. He was an outsider. A pariah. He was my love. Here's some canned meat and a food pill, and I put on some water for coffee.
Oh, bless your own. Come on now, Joe. Here's a bit of meat for your black soul to feed on. He's hungry, poor creature. Well, then. Sit down, girl, where I can look at you.
All right.
Have you missed me?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I've had some thoughts of you, I dare say.
Talk to me.
Of what?
Tell me again about outside, what it's like.
Again?
Again and again.
Well, now, outside... You say the coffee's heating?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, it is a wonderland for sure. More amazing than you and your entombed folk could ever imagine, a veritable fairyland.
Well, tell me the truth about
the truth? I am telling you the truth, my love.
But the bombs and the dust made only ugliness.
At first. But then they changed the life and the seed of them that were brave enough to stay. Wonders beyond wondering bloomed and walked. Well, have none of you been outside?
Well, the radiation teams go up into the ruined buildings once or twice a year to find canned food and batteries. But they can only work for a few minutes at a time.
Ah, sure, those blind-souled slugs could never see anything but food and batteries anyway.
Well, tell me what you see, beyond the city, I mean.
Ah, there are gardens there. Gardens where a dozen buds blossom for every one before. And the flowers have petals a yard across.
Oh.
And there are stings. harmless bees as big as sparrows suck in their nectar.
But did the radiation make all the cats like this one?
Like this runt? Why, no, girl. They are grown spotted and huge as leopards. But they're gentle bees, for the dust has burned all the murder out of every living thing.
Well, Hank says the dust kills.
Would you like to hear the poem I made?
Yes.
I'd say it. Fire can hurt me, or water, or the weight of earth. But by some curious coincidence, the dust is my friend.
Oh, more.
Well, then, there are robins like cockatoos and squirrels like a prince's ermine, all under a treasure chest of sun and moon and stars that the dust changes from ruby to emerald and sapphire. And there are... What is it, love? What's that look for?
There's one thing you've never told me about.
And what is that?
The children. The new children.
Ah, now the children.
The truth.
The truth?
Promise.
I swear on the skin of my cat here. The children, is it, huh? Well, now, if you'd ever catch a glimpse of one of them, you'd never doubt me again. They have long limbs and smiling, delicate faces and white teeth and the finest hair. They're so nimble that, well, that even I, a sprightly man and somewhat enlivened by the dust, feel crippled beside them. And their thoughts dance like flames.
But what's wrong with them, Patrick?
Wrong? Nay, love, there's nothing wrong. Different, perhaps, and new, but not wrong.
Oh, tell me, tell me.
Well, then, they do have 7 fingers on each hand and 8 toes on either foot. But they're much more beautiful for it. And they have large, beautiful ears that the sun shines through. So lovely and delicate to behold.
How do they behave? They're mine.
Not as you and I, perhaps. They play happily in the gardens all day long, laughing and finding joy in the simplest beauty.
Are they defective?
Well, now... By the standards out there, you're the defective one, shut up here all the while, hating and crawling in ugliness and feeling dirty. No, they're quite lovely. And they're quite perfect, the new children.
Oh, you're telling the truth. You're not making it up.
It is true, every word of it. Oh, I'll admit you have to look a bit hard to find these things I've been telling you. But find them you may. Do you believe me?
Oh, yes. Yes, I believe you. But I'm afraid.
Give me your hand.
Here.
Now listen to me. You must not be afraid to do as your heart tells you. That's why I'm here.
Patrick.
Don't either of you move.
Oh, Hank, I...
Stay there, I'll bless both of you.
Oh, Hank, but...
Carrying on like this and not even with a man of the community, with an outcast, a pariah.
No, man, I know what you're thinking, but you're wrong. I just happened to be coming by hungry, a lonely tramp. And I knocked at the shutter and your wife was a bit foolish and let her kind heart get the best of it.
Do you think you can sell me that?
Hank, please.
So you're going to have a child, my dear. My child?
Yes, your child.
Ah, I should pull this trigger right now. I should shoot him down in cold blood.
Man, you're mad. I never touched your wife.
You contaminated pariah. You're going to die. Don't you know that?
Hank. Hank, if you kill him, you kill the bringer of the best news we've ever had. Oh, Hank, put aside your jealousy for just a minute and listen to me. Patrick has something wonderful to tell us, all of us.
What do you mean?
I mean that we need no longer fear the dust. Oh, Hank, remember how it was with me. All the exposure I had, and yet there were no burns. Hank, those who were brave enough to stay outside have adapted. They've become a beautiful people.
Did he tell you that?
Everything that grew or moved was purified.
He filled you with lies so he could take you...
It's true. The radioactivity is almost gone, burned out.
Effie, I've been out there. It's horrid.
No, no, no. You've been blinded. Blinded to beauty. Blinded to living.
Good Lord, you believe it.
It's true. It must be true. Look at Patrick. He's living proof. He's been outside for a year and there isn't a mark on him, not a scar. It's because he's brave. And the dust can't hurt the brave.
Well, you think that's it, huh? All right, Effie, I'm going to prove something to you. You, Patrick, take this radiation counter. Take it. Very well. Press the button and count yourself. Go on. As you say. Read it. Read it!
1,700.
Yeah, you hear that, Effie? 1,700 radioactives, enough to kill 1,000 men. He's like raw radium. If you turn out the light, he'll glow green in the dark. A week's exposure to him will destroy you.
What are you proving, Hank?
That he's a freak. A freak! Get away from him. He's destroying you right now.
May I shut this thing off now?
Patrick. Is it true?
Yes, I'm afraid it is true.
Oh,
you do well to cringe, both of you. I'm living death. I'm death itself. As your husband so wisely said, I'm a freak. Just like the man who ate nails and walked on fire. Only my oddity is that for some unknown reason, the dust can't harm me. I'm the only one. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Not too close now. And examine the man who couldn't die. And now, if you don't mind, I'll go back to my dead world and leave you to yours.
Wait. All of those beautiful things.
It gets so...
Are you a boy or a girl?
And I was starved for you. And so were you.
There's no garden out there.
Garden? Listen to me, the both of you. What is out there is more terrible than either of you can imagine.
You're worse than Hank, even. He only killed Beauty once. But you brought it to life so you could kill it again. You're afraid. Afraid of the loneliness out there. Well, I'm not afraid.
Effie, keep away from the window.
No, I'm not afraid. Maybe there is no garden out there. And no beautiful, strange children to play happily. But there can be if we're brave enough.
Effie.
I'm going, Hank. I'm going!
Effie, come back, Effie!
It's no use trying to keep her, man.
Effie, come back! I love you! Come back!
It's no use, man.
There's still time. She stood the dust better than most. There's still time. You, the dust won't hurt you. Find her, bring her back. I'll reward you. I'll give you food.
If you want her, you'll have to go yourself.
She'll die.
Maybe she won't.
How can you say such a thing?
Because perhaps she's like me. Aye. Perhaps the two of us together could be the first of a race that'll live in sunlight again.
Get against the wall where I can kill you easier.
Why would you kill me? Is killing all the answer you have to life's riddles? Is the smell of blood better than compassion? Is it more joy to own her than to be loved by her?
Move!
Man, you'll not kill me. Shall I tell you why? Because my flesh will not die. I live 1,000 years.
Not your brain, Patrick. And that's where this gun is aimed.
Well, then you leave me no choice.
Joe, get it! Hey, call him up! Cut my arm! Joe, stop!
Well, then I have your weapon now. Out there, you see, we freaks have learned to live together and to cooperate. It's the only way we can stay alive. Oh, I'll give Effie your love. Come on, Joe. Oh, you'd better close the shutters as soon as we're gone. The moon is beautiful. But it's deadly.
end of the ruined street. When we looked back, we saw Hank closing the lead shutters on himself. We were alone in the world. Above us, the moon was green. I bent and picked up a handful of the dust and let it trickle through my fingers. And I remembered the words of Patrick's poem. Fire can hurt me, or water, or the weight of the earth. But by some strange coincidence, the dust is my friend.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Advance Agent by Christopher Anvil, the story of a spy who had the worst possible break. The disguise he had assumed was that of a famous man. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Moon is Green, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Fritz Leiber and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Joyce Gordon as Effie, Bill Lipton as Hank, Ian Martin as Patrick, and Frank Milano as the Cat. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Good morning. This is a special pitching edition of Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. To help us get you to donate money and also just talk about his work and how it relates and complete with premiums, our guest is John Joseph Adams. Stay tuned. once again, good morning. Well, I'm probably in over my head technologically, so let me just say hello, John. Are you there, John?
Hello, Jim.
Oh, okay. It's wow, it worked. And I do not know this facility. And we, John Joseph Adams is calling in via Skype. And while we have Skype here, we have it set up that we can take Skype coming in, but then he wouldn't be able to hear me talking into the microphone, which is sort of like ridiculous. So hold on, John. Let me promo stuff and talk for a minute, and then you and I will get going, okay?
All right.
Okay, very good. First of all, it's 107. By all rights, this program is Earthwatch. By all rights, Robert Knight is on the air right now. But, you know, horrible tragedy strikes, and we have lost Robert. He is not here. I am here this week. I'm not sure what's here next week. And I will be back in 2 weeks from 1 till 3 a.m. And when the fund drive ends, we will, you know, see what programming changes will occur. But to me, this is still a shock. This is still like... I filled in for Robert any number of times. In fact, more to the point, Robert would often be so gracious. In fact, John, you remember that we did a midnight to three slot on the Barsoom book?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Robert giving us his airtime. And so I'm not a stranger to this time slot, but I want Robert to be saying, yeah, sure, go ahead, Jim, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like this. It's not right. It's mortality sucks. In two words. So I wanted to say that to listeners who are tuning in. And also, this coming Tuesday, May 13th, we have a special, as if they aren't all special, a special edition of the New York Review of Science Fiction Reading, something that John is also not a stranger to. We did, it was your Oz book, right, that we did a year ago, March?
Uh-huh. Many other ones before that?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Quite a few. And more to come, except now you live on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of Joyzy. How do you like it out there, by the way?
Oh, it's great. I mean, where I live, we kind of have nice weather all year round. It was a little bit too windy today, and our fence actually started to fall down. But
oh god!
Can't complain.
What city are you in?
Lompoc, famous for our wonderful prison, and also Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is actually more wonderful because they launch all kinds of rockets from there.
Yes. Ooh, have you seen any launches?
Oh, yeah, many launches, yeah. They happen very regularly. So, and we have a little mailing list that we're on, and it lets us know when they're about to happen so we can, go pay attention. A lot of times half the town ends up driving down to this one little stretch of road where you can really have a good view of the launch pad, and you can just watch them go right up. And,
yes.
And you feel it and everything. It's pretty great.
And that probably helps explain why you're doing three books in a row on the apocalypse.
Yes, indeed.
Also, Fire Sign Theater make a few references to Lompoc. Or Lompoc is how I first heard the name of the town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I first moved out here, Robert Silverberg, I was talking to him, and he knew of Lompoc because of the because of the prison. So, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Reputation precedes us.
Okay, so prison, Air Force Base, Fire Sign Theater, it all comes together, doesn't it?
Yes.
At the end. So let me go on to mentioning the Nursef reading next week. And this one isn't a reading, it's a play. Andrea Hairston, who has done, this is actually, I think, her fourth or fifth reading or event for us, but this is like the second or third play that she's done at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. Cherie Renee Thomas first produced a couple, and now, well, I'm doing one. And this is a show called Thunderbird at the Next World Theater, a staged reading with music, written and directed by Andrea Hairston, music written and performed by Pan Morgan, along with Jerry and Sylvia Johnson, and performed by Andrea Hairston, the acting, James Emery, Joy Voth, and Amma Patterson, who is also another science fiction writer, and pretty darned good one, I think, although she doesn't write a lot because she's a lawyer, so she gets busy. Sound design by Jazz, J-A-Z, Tupelo, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'll find out on Tuesday when he bops me, but it's T-U-P-E-L-O. And it's coming up Tuesday, May 13th. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. The admission is free. We suggest a donation on the way in. And where it's being held? Well, it's being held in the old same place, or the same old place, but the name changes every few months. And what was the Soho Gallery for Digital Art is now Gallery Lala. And Gallery Lala, and it was for a while the Soho Art Space, but now it's Gallery Lala, which is actually an artisan's market, which actually sounds pretty cool. And it is thanks to them that the reading series continues there, because if not for that, the Soho Gallery would probably be, you know, rented out by a liquor store or something like that. So it's this artisan's market in the meantime, and I don't think that the market is open itself selling things on Tuesday, although they are thinking about it because they know that we're bringing in a few people. But it's still at 138 Sullivan Street between Prince and Houston, but instead of the upstairs area with all them cool pictures, we're still going to have the pictures, but the performance, and from now on, will be in the downstairs area, the dungeon, the basement. And so I ask anybody, if you have any kind of mobility issues, please let me know, and we will do what we can to get you in. But send me an email, jim@ourwolf.com, H-O-U-R-W-O-L-F, and we'll figure out how to get you into the space. The plot, very basically, in the not-too-distant future, public gatherings, including perhaps especially theater, have been banned, supposedly for public health and national security. Drones control the streets. I guess that's Amazon.com. Benny, an old actor, sneaks into the Next World Theater on a dangerous mission to catalog resources and gather precious artifacts. Perhaps he is on another mission. Perhaps he's an enforcer, betraying everything he once believed in but can't quite remember. Dragons, musicians, and a second actor show up and challenge Benny to face a past he would like to forget and a future he wants to give up on. And this comes to us via Chrysalis Theater, basically, which is this multicultural production company that comes out of... John, help me. Where is... where are Gavin and Kelly based?
Somewhere in Massachusetts, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely Massachusetts. It's Northampton.
That's it.
Yes. So, Chrysalis Theater, they're just saying Western Mass. A cross-cultural performance ensemble has presented works since 1978. You know what? I'm not going to tell you more. Show up. It's free. What's it going to hurt you? You're going to have a wonderful time. Our event, I got to tell you, the event we had a month ago was incredible and fabulous. And for once, the video really came out nice. So I'm going to be putting that up on YouTube. Enough. That was our, John, that was our Robert Sheckley event.
Oh, wow.
And we had Sheckley's second wife, Ziva Quitney, and his daughter, Elisa Quitney, who's also a best-selling writer under the name Elisa Quitney, writing paranormal comedy romances, and co-author of at least two of the Sandman books with Neil Gaiman, because she was also the editor at Vertigo Comics for like 15, 16 years. So, and then this guy, Michael Swanwick, who performed with Elisa, performed the short story Warm, which is a wonderful short story. And the two of them talk about ham. It was wonderful. So, first of all, we should do a disclosure. John, we should tell people, I work for you.
Yeah, I'm your boss now.
Yes, that is correct. For incredible, amazing sums of money. And
yes.
When I say it's amazing, it's true. If we told people what you pay me, they'd say, you do how much work for how much? That's amazing. To which I say, hey, it's better than WBAI. Right? You know, it's like...
Yeah,
okay. So, but I'm very happy to have the work. John, outside of being an anthologist of God knows how many books a year would you say?
I've done at least two every year since I started, and this year I have five, so between two and five.
Yeah. Yeah, which is a nice average. Plus, one weekly magazine, one bi-weekly magazine, and co-host of the Geek's Guide to the Galaxy podcast.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Although I have dropped down now to just producer of Geek's Guide, and I'm more of an occasional co-host at this point.
So is David doing it alone? How's that working?
Yeah, pretty much.
David Barr-Quigley.
Earlier in the year, you know, it was announced that I would be curating the Best American Science Fiction and Fantasy series for Houghton Mifflin Harcourt.
I forgot to mention that, yes.
Right, but so once I got that on my plate, you know, Geek's Guide just became one of those things where it's like, I gotta figure out a way to cut something back, and that was something that we, Dave and I talked about it previously, even before that happened, and it just seemed like a good time to sort of maybe back off and just sort of do occasional appearances on the show instead of being on every episode. So yeah, he's running the show on his own right now, although I'm still a producer, so I'm still helping him pick the guests and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that would be described what, as a Skiffy variety show?
Skiffy,
to people out there, meaning science fiction. But
yeah, I mean, it's more generally a geek-oriented one, just because occasionally there are guests who are not science fiction or fantasy per se, but there are always people who would sort of be of interest to genre fans.
Okay.
So like, you know, you have somebody like Neil deGrasse Tyson or other scientist-type figures like that.
Or WBAI personality like Michio Kaku?
Yes, indeed. He was a more recent one that we had on, and so you know, that kind of thing. And then... So the first half of the show is an interview. The second half of the show is a sort of panel discussion type of thing. Sort of thing you might find at a science fiction convention, for instance. But, you know, just on various topics. We just recorded one this afternoon, actually, about my new anthology, Dead Man's Hand, which is a weird Western anthology. And so it was just me and a couple of the contributors, along with Dave Kirtley, and we were talking about what some of our favorite examples of weird Westerns are, like in comics and books and that kind of thing.
Okay, so thumbs up or down on Dredd?
On which one?
Is it Judge Dredd? Was that the...
Oh, Judge Dredd, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually seen the new movie, but I've heard it's good.
Yeah, well, I heard that from one of your... actually, for Lightspeed Magazine, one of your occasional writers being Genevieve Valentine.
Mm-hmm.
Who... but I heard that personally. And by the way, the interview she did with Darren Aronofsky was really top-notch.
Oh, good. Oh, glad you liked it.
Yeah, I did. And it's funny because, like, 2 days before it went live, I read from about 2 months ago a long feature article about Aronofsky in The New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about how difficult it is to get stuff out of him at times.
Mm-hmm.
And Genevieve did a bang-up job, and I saw her last Sunday by coincidence. Well, not a coincidence. It was a science fiction reading. And she mentioned how he wouldn't answer this one particular question, and I said, well, you got one, the New Yorker. There were about a dozen topics he wouldn't go near.
Mm-hmm.
So we
That was pretty exciting to get that interview lined up. I've been a fan of his since Pi, and so it was just very cool to have that sort of fall into our lap.
Yeah, have you seen Noah?
I haven't seen it. No, as much as I've been a fan of his since Pi, Noah didn't actually really appeal to me too much. But I've sort of heard some mixed things, and I'll probably check it out when it comes out on DVD. But
yeah,
I don't get to the theater that much.
Yeah, he would say that's a good thing. He actually said in the New Yorker he doesn't really have that much respect for people who like all of his work.
Uh-huh.
Because all of his work, everything goes in so many different directions.
Right, right.
And
he'll probably have mad respect for me then, because
yeah,
I don't like much. I don't like all of it.
Yeah, if you like Pi, you might not like Black Swan, and God knows I didn't like The Wrestler, and so on and so forth. And Noah is apparently a rather and how he was able to make it an idiosyncratic movie on a high, high budget. He made Pi for, $5 million or less.
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed that much, but I guess it's possible.
I think it's less,
Yeah, I'm thinking about that movie Primer that was made for, $7,000, so it's like, Pi kind of feels like that, but I think it's possible it costs more.
And I liked Primer, I must say.
Oh, no, me, I did too, yeah.
Yeah. So we haven't even properly mentioned the two magazines that I work for you on, and those are Lightspeed Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a business question for you. I've been saying in the intro, I am the podcast host.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I'm finally barely starting to get comfortable with my voice. Mm-hmm. I go on the mic here and I'm totally comfortable, and I start recording in my little home-built studio,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it's like there is a rod inserted in the wrong place. but at this point I've been hosting since about January.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah, January. Actually, it was early March. I was supposed to start earlier, and I just, too many things happening, and Jack Kincaid continued his incredibly great job for a while, and then I took over about March, and I'm starting to loosen up now. But what I have been doing for a little over a year, since March last year, is I've been editing.
Mm-hmm.
Which for me is great because I've been editing audio. I started at WBAI in 1967, editing stuff for Baird Searles and Samuel R. Delaney.
Mm-hmm.
But that, when I say cutting tape, I mean razor blade, block. And thanks to this job for John, I am honing my digital skills. And starting to get more comfy with that. In fact, last week I produced Hour of the Wolf at home using the skills I'm gaining from doing it in my home studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good craft to have. So Lightspeed Magazine turns out a weekly reading, and Nightmare Magazine, I think people can guess, that means dark fantasy / horror. Although this week's story really isn't horror, is it? It's dark fantasy.
I'm not even sure which one is it this week.
I'll have to go to the website. I'm just remembering because I'm.
Damian Walters, the Damian Angelica Walters story. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And where the end of the story is sort of. It's not really horrible, is it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there was a better term for the genre than either horror or dark fantasy, I would use that. Like, if I could just say, dark fiction or sort of dark genre fiction. Yeah. I would probably try to use that instead, because a lot of the magazine is horror. A lot of it is dark fantasy, but sometimes there's things that sort of fall between those cracks. Obviously sometimes it's dark science fiction, and there's just like different kinds of examples like that. But darkness is really just the key, and it really came out of because I was getting so much good dark stuff that I couldn't fit it all in Lightspeed, because if Lightspeed has a general focus, I can't really fill it up with all this dark stuff.
So, yeah, and this week's Lightspeed, a tank only fears mm-hmm. four things, is it's dark and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It has an ending which could be interpreted as being dark or negative, and I interpreted it actually as being very positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
And, well, that's basically, so I edit yeah. both of these, mm-hmm. and Jack Kincaid, who had been the host of both, and he really developed the sound and I guess fostered the hosting of the podcast, gave up Lightspeed, where John then asked me to host it, and I'm still editing Nightmare, but I'm mm-hmm. hosting Lightspeed. And Jack is hosting Nightmare. But both are generally 99.5% of the time produced by Skyboat Media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people would be interested to know that the way it works is that Skyboat Media, which is run by Stefan Rudnicki, who's a Grammy and Audie Award-winning narrator and producer, Skyboat Media gets the narrators, they line them up, they do all the recordings, and then they shuttle off that audio to Jim, and then Jim takes the audio and he cuts out all the ums and ers and all that kind of stuff. And
also the bad takes. I mean, sometimes, one sentence can have five takes.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
And I get to choose. I get to choose which one of the five I like the most. It may not be always the last take.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of magic that goes into it that I have no idea about even.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's fun. It's fun. It is a form of theater,
mm-hmm,
especially mm-hmm. the way they do it. And they, both Stefan and Gabriel DeCure are masters of dialect,
mm-hmm,
and have amazing voices. But they also bring in people like Alex Hyde White, you know, mm-hmm, who to me is, you know, if you are of a certain age, as I am, Wilfred Hyde White. Pickering from My Fair Lady, and got the man did well over 90 films. This is mm-hmm. his son.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he's a fabulous reader, and he's a Hollywood actor, where Wilfred Hyde White was most definitely British.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get First Men in the Moon. He's one of the co-stars of that.
Mm-hmm.
A big Wilfred Hyde White fan here, so it's fun editing his son. There was one story, the writer I had not really heard of that much, by the name of Samuel J. Miller,
mm-hmm,
who had a piece called about the
57 Reasons for this Lake Quarry Suicide.
That's the one. And I had him on the show, coincidentally, because he was producing a queer science fiction reading evening. And I had him on the week after I edited his story. And it's this rather strange kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to do a show and an interview. Now, Stefan and Gabrielle are coming to New York at the end of this month for the Audie Awards,
mm-hmm,
as well as BEA, the Book Expo. And I'll be doing at least an interview, if not an event, with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the... They hire different actors sometimes, and sometimes they do the voices themselves. The other approach, a la Clark's World, is they have one narrator, Kate Baker, who's masterful.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's my approach for Hour of the Wolf and the reading series, which is I actually dare to have the writers,
mm-hmm.
who obviously cannot perform as well as professional narrators. But there's something, A, it gives me a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I like the writer's voice, since the first person I ever worked for as an editor was Samuel R. Delaney narrating The Star Pit.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three approaches, but working with Stefan and Gabrielle and sometimes getting hidden messages, like, you know, the session begins, you hear the door open to the studio, Gabrielle sits down and says, "Hi, Jim," and I melt. Takes away 10 minutes of work right there. It's like, oh, hi, Gabrielle. So...
yeah, actually, speaking of Gabrielle, you know, the next issue of Lightspeed, the June issue, is the Women Destroy Science Fiction special issue, which we, you know, it's a double issue, and we did a Kickstarter for it to help make it a double issue, and it was very successful. But Gabrielle, given that it's an all-women issue, Gabrielle is the guest producer for that one. So,
and Muir Lafferty is the host instead of me.
Yes,
But I'll still mix it.
Yes. But yeah, Gabrielle is super, super excited about it.
Yeah.
I mean, as we all are, but I mean, yeah, she's just super excited about it.
Yeah, but I have to get audio from her, and let me get this approved from you right now.
Mm-hmm.
I always mix in, I keep Jack's voice in there, as you've noticed, mm-hmm. but don't you think that we should have Gabrielle just do that little light speed at the end?
That's a good idea.
That little sound logo?
Yeah, no, we should totally do that.
Yeah, just get her to do that so that it's... and nobody need know that I, the mm-hmm. editor, have different chromosomes.
So, I mean, we definitely thought a lot about the different roles that everyone normally fills, and, you know, we figured, okay, well, you know, all of the editorial side is female, and that's really the important thing. And you know, we even extended that a little bit.
And somebody named Christy Yant, I believe, is the editor of those four stories?
Yes, I can't remember if, at least one of them is a reprint, but so Christy Yant is the overall guest editor, and she selected all the original fiction, and then Rachel Swirsky was our guest reprint editor, so she picked all the reprints, and then we had Robin Lupo is one of my assistant editors. She curated a Flash fiction section, which we've never actually published Flash before, this is the first time, but in order to get as many women involved in the issue as possible, we decided to open up the Flash fiction, and so she edited that section. If I recall correctly, of the audio stories we're doing in June, I think half of them are, or let's see, two, I think two of them are the original fiction. One of them is one of the Flash stories, and then one of them is one of the reprints. So
yeah, so
I think you're getting a little bit of everyone.
Yeah. So, but to me, that means I've got 10 stories.
Yeah.
To mix, at least.
Right.
Now I only have to edit 6,
mm-hmm.
which is my usual amount. But I'll just be mixing
mm-hmm.
the four that are the Women Destroy Science Fiction.
Right.
And after that, am I wrong in believing that there's going to be Women Destroy Fantasy?
Yes. So as part of the Kickstarter, we reached a couple of stretch goals, and so we unlocked Women Destroy Fantasy and Women Destroy Horror. Those are both coming out in October, and Women Destroy Fantasy is going to be a special issue of Fantasy Magazine, which people may remember... When I took over as publisher of Lightspeed, I took over as publisher of Fantasy Magazine as well. But then I merged Fantasy Magazine into Lightspeed, and so Fantasy isn't really an ongoing magazine at the moment. But for this, we're bringing it back for this one special issue.
Yeah, it's like when I worked at Galaxy Magazine, we also had Worlds of If,
right,
folded into Galaxy,
right. It would be like if, like, a couple years down the line, Galaxy decided to do that one more special issue of If just as a bonus, you know?
Yeah.
So kind of like that. And then the Women Destroy Horror, that's going to be a special issue of Nightmare, as you could probably guess. Yeah. So the Women of July Fantasy is guest edited by Kat Rambo, who edited Fantasy Magazine for many years. And Women Destroy Horror is guest edited by Ellen Datlow. And so, you know, like the legendary queen of anthologies.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to have... well, I guess I'm going to have her here, aren't I?
Oh, yeah.
It's been
a while
since she's been here anyway.
Yeah, drag her down to my studio.
No, she's been to this location up in Harlem twice.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she doesn't care as long as I drive her. You know, that you know, that'll do.
Yeah.
So there's the thing. What's interesting to me, of course, as probably, I dare say, the person who's been doing audio science fiction, I'm not going to say better, but longer than anybody else in the world.
Yeah.
Given that I started, God help me, I started here in 1967, May 1st, 1967, but I started working as an editor, learning how to edit. I don't think any of my edits actually made it into the final on the Star Pit with Delaney. But I guess it's fair to say that I have been editing science fiction audio for 47 years.
Hmm.
Which is scary when you think I'm 60.
Yeah.
So, maybe a mere 46 years.
Well, yeah, wow, you got to plan something big for the big 5-0 there. It's coming up on you.
Yeah. Assuming Pacifica and WBAI survive.
Yeah.
We shall...
Well, you'll still be editing for Lightspeed and Nightmare, hopefully, you know, even if they don't. So.
Hopefully, yes. And the skill set that you're giving me will also allow for a podcast edition of Hour of the Wolf.
Indeed, yes.
So Hour of the Wolf is going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
But that does bring us to the point of the continued existence of WBAI, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And we have been chatting here for nigh on 38 minutes. But John has made possible a premium for WBAI at one of the most reasonable prices of any premiums that you can get, which is to say, first tell us about The End is Nigh.
Okay, well, The End is Nigh is the first of a series of anthologies I'm co-editing and co-publishing, actually, with Hugh Howey, who wrote the book Wool, and he's a big self-published success story. The series is called The Apocalypse Triptych, and so it's a series of three anthologies, the first one being The End is Nigh, and each one focuses on a different mode of the apocalypse. So The End is Nigh focuses on life before the apocalypse, and then The End is Now, the second volume, takes place during the apocalypse, and then The End Has Come is the third volume, and that takes place after the apocalypse. And so in The End is Nigh, it's all stuff sort of leading up until the apocalypse, and... So we have that triptych happening, but then a lot of the authors in the anthology are going to be writing stories for all three books, and they'll sort of have these little mini story triptychs within the overall, anthology triptych.
So there actually will be arcs.
Yeah. Not everyone is continuing it exactly. Like, I know Jake Kerr is writing a story for the second volume, and he's not picking up with those same characters, but it's set in the same world. So some of the authors are going to do stuff like that. And then the other ones are going to skip around a little bit. And, you know, there's going to be certain time jumps in between them, depending on what the authors had in mind and what type of apocalypse they had and whatnot. But I'm really looking forward to seeing where everyone goes with their stories. Because I think all of the stories in The End is Nigh really stand alone very well. But they, like most good short stories, they leave you with this, like, sense of wanting more. Well, even though they satisfy, they, you know, you want to know, like, oh, like, what else could happen in this milieu? So... I think they all turned out pretty great. And actually, The End is Nigh features the first new short story by Paolo Bacigalupi in many years, like 5 years or so.
Yeah.
So that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, because he's been concentrating on novels.
Yep.
For the basic reason, one of my favorite questions, and when I used to work for Datlow on Omni Online, one of the earliest online